betray the other, testify against them in court, and this would take 1 year off their own prison sentence, but add 2 years to the others. Or a prisoner could cooperate, staying silent. So, if both prisoners defected, each testifying against the other, they would serve 3 years apiece. If both cooperated, or stayed silent, they would serve 2 years each. But if one defected and the other cooperated, the defector would serve a single year, and the cooperator would serve 4. And both prisoners had to make their decision without knowing the other one's choice, and neither would be given a chance to change their decision afterward. Draco had observed that if the two prisoners had been Death Eaters during the Wizarding War, the Dark Lord would have killed any traitors. Harry had nodded and said that was one way to resolve the prisoner's dilemma. And, in fact, both Death Eaters would want there to be a Dark Lord for exactly that reason. Draco had asked Harry to stop and let him think about this for a while before they continued. It had explained a lot about why Father and his friends had agreed to serve under a Dark Lord who often wasn't nice to them. In fact, Harry had said this was pretty much the reason why people had governments. You might be better off if you stole from someone else, just like each prisoner would be individually better off if they defected in the prisoner's dilemma. But if everyone thought like that, the country would fall into chaos and everyone would be worse off. Like what would happen if both prisoners defected. So, people let themselves be ruled by governments, just like the Death Eaters had let themselves be ruled by the Dark Lord. Draco had asked Harry to stop again. Draco had always taken for granted that ambitious wizards put themselves in power because they wanted to rule, and people let themselves be ruled because they were scared little Hufflepuffs. And this, on reflection, still seemed true, but Harry's perspective was fascinating, even if it was wrong. But, Harry had continued afterward, the fear of a third party punishing you was not the only possible reason to cooperate in the prisoner's dilemma. Suppose, Harry had said, you were playing the game against a magically produced identical copy of yourself. Draco had said that if there were two Dracos, of course neither Draco would want anything bad to happen to the other one, not to mention that no Malfoy would let himself become known as a traitor. Harry had nodded again and said that this was yet another solution to the prisoner's dilemma. People might cooperate because they cared about each other, or because they had senses of honour, or because they wanted to preserve their reputation. Indeed, Harry had said, it was rather difficult to construct a true prisoner's dilemma. In real life, people usually cared about the other person, or their honour, or their reputation, or a Dark Lord's punishment, or something besides the prison sentences. But suppose the copy had been of someone completely selfish. Pansy Parkinson had been the example they'd used. So, each pansy only cared what happened to her, and not to the other pansy. Given that this was all Pansy cared about, and that there was no Dark Lord, and Pansy wasn't worried about her reputation, and Pansy either had no sense of honour or didn't consider herself obligated to the other prisoner, then would the rational thing be for Pansy to cooperate or defect? Some people, Harry said, claimed that the rational thing to do was for Pansy to defect against her copy. But Harry, plus someone named Douglas Hofstadter, thought these people were wrong. Because, Harry had said, if Pansy defected, not at random, but for what seemed to her like rational reasons, then the other Pansy would think exactly the same way. two identical copies wouldn't decide different things. So, Pansy had to choose between a world in which both pansies cooperated, or a world in which both pansies defected. And she was better off if both copies cooperated. And if Harry had thought rational people did defect in the prisoner's dilemma, then he wouldn't have done anything to spread that kind of rationality. Because a country, or a conspiracy full of rational people, would dissolve into chaos. You would tell your enemies about rationality. Which had all sounded reasonable at the time, but now the thought was occurring to Draco that...
You said, Draco said, that the rational solution to the prisoner's dilemma is to cooperate. But of course, you would want me to believe that, wouldn't you?
And if Draco was fooled into cooperating, Harry would just say, "Ha-ha! Betrayed you again!" and laugh at him about it afterward.
"I wouldn't fake your lessons," Harry said seriously. "But I have to remind you, Draco, that I didn't say you should just automatically cooperate. Not on a true prisoner's dilemma like this one. What I said was that when you choose, you shouldn't think like you're choosing for just yourself, or like you're choosing for everyone. You should think like you're choosing for all the people who are similar enough to you that they'll probably do the same thing you do for the same reasons. And also choosing the predictions made by anyone who knows you well enough to predict you accurately, so that you never have to regret being rational because of the correct predictions that other people make about you. Remind me to explain about Newcomb's problem at some point. So, the question you and I have to ask, Draco, is this. Are we similar enough that we'll probably do the same thing, whatever it is, making our decisions in mostly the same way? Or do we know each other well enough to predict each other, so that I can predict whether you'll cooperate or defect, and you can predict that I've decided to do the same thing I predict you'll do, because I know that you can predict me deciding that."
And Draco couldn't help but think that, since he had to strain just to understand half of that, the answer was obviously no.
"Yes," said Draco.
There was a pause.
"I see,"
said Harry, sounding disappointed.
Well, I guess we'll have to think of some other way then."
Draco hadn't thought that was going to work. Draco and Harry talked about it back and forth. They had both agreed much earlier that what they did on the battlefield would not count as broken promises in real life, though Draco was a little angry about what Harry had done in Professor Quirrell's office, and said so. But if the two of them couldn't rely on honour or friendship, that did leave the question of how to get their armies to work together on beating Sunshine, despite everything Granger might try to break them up. Professor Quirrell's rules didn't make it tempting to let Sunshine kill the other army's soldiers. That just increased the bar you had to pass yourself. But it did tempt each side to steal kills instead of acting like a single army would, or to shoot some of the other side's soldiers during the confusion of battle. Hermione was walking back to Ravenclaw, not really looking where she was going, her mind preoccupied with war and treachery and other age-appropriate concepts, and she turned a corner and bumped straight into a grown-up.
"Sorry,"
she said automatically, and then, entirely without thinking,
"Don't worry, Miss Granger,"
said the cheerful smile set beneath the twinkling eyes and above the silver beard of the Headmaster of Hogwarts.
You are quite forgiven.
Her gaze was helplessly locked on the kindly face of the most powerful wizard in the world, who was also the chief warlock, who was also the supreme mugwump, who had gone insane years ago from the stress of fighting the Dark Lord, and numerous other facts that were popping up into her mind one after the other, while her throat went on making little embarrassing squeaks.
"In fact, Miss Granger,"
said Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore,
"it is quite lucky that we bumped into each other. Why, I was just now wondering curiously what the three of you were thinking of asking for your wishes."
Saturday dawned bright and clear, with the students speaking in hushed voices, as though the first shout might set off the explosion. Draco had hoped that they would be fighting in the upper levels of Hogwarts again. Professor Quirrell had said that real fights were more likely to take place in cities than forests, and fighting inside schoolrooms and corridors was supposed to simulate that, with ribbons to mark the allowed areas. Dragon Army had done well in those fights. Instead, just as Draco had feared, Professor Quirrell had come up with something special for this battle. The battleground was the Hogwarts Lake, and not in boats either. They were fighting underwater. The giant squid had been temporarily paralyzed. Spells had been set in place to keep away the Grindelows. Professor Quirrell had gone and talked to the merfolk, and all the soldiers had been issued potions of underwater action that allowed them to breathe, see clearly, talk to each other, and swim not quite as fast as walking by kicking their legs. A huge silver sphere hung in the center of the battleground, shining like a small underwater moon. It would help to provide a sense of direction. At first, the moon would slowly go into eclipse as the battle went on, and when it had gone entirely dark, the battle would end, if it hadn't already. War in water. You couldn't defend a perimeter. Attackers could come at you from any direction, and even with the potion, you couldn't see very far in the darkness of the lake. And if you swam too far away from the action, you'd start to glow after a while and be easy to hunt down. Ordinarily, if an army scattered and ran instead of fighting, Professor Quirrell would just declare them defeated. But today they were working on a point system. Of course, you still had some time before you started to glow, if you wanted to play assassin. Dragon Army had been set low in the water at the start of the game. Above and far away, the distant underwater moon shone. The murky water was mostly lit by Lumos charms, though his soldiers would extinguish the lights as soon as they began manoeuvres. There was no point in letting the enemy see you before you saw them. Draco kicked his legs a few times, propelling him to a higher position from which he could gaze down at where his soldiers hovered in the water. The conversations died down almost at once under Draco's icy glare, his soldiers looking up at him with gratifying expressions of fear and worry.
"Listen to me very carefully," said General Malfoy.
His voice came out a little lower, a little burbly with bubbles.
"Listen to me very carefully."
But the sound travelled clearly.
"There's only one way we can win this. We've got to march on Sunshine together with Chaos and beat Sunshine. Then we fight it out with Potter and win. That's got to happen. Understand? No matter what else goes on, that part has to happen that way."
And Draco explained the plan he and Harry had come up with.
Astonished looks were exchanged among the soldiers.
"And if any of your plots get in the way of that," finished Draco, "after we're out of the water, I will set you on fire."
There was a nervous chorus of, "Yes, sirs."
"And everyone with secret orders, make sure you carry them out to the letter," said Draco.
Around half his soldiers openly nodded, and Draco marked them for death after he rose to power. Of course, all the private orders were fake, like one dragon being told to offer a false traitor's commission to another dragon, and the second dragon being told in hushed confidence to report anything said by the first dragon. Draco had told each dragon that the whole war could depend on that one thing, and that he hoped they understood it was more important than the plans they had previously made. With luck, that would keep all the idiots happy, and maybe flush out a few spies to boot, if the reports didn't match the instructions. Draco's real plan for winning against Chaos? Well, it was simpler than the one he'd burned, but Father still wouldn't have liked it. Despite trying, though, Draco hadn't been able to think of anything better. It was a plot that couldn't possibly have worked against anyone except Harry Potter. In fact, it had been Harry's plan originally, according to the traitor, though Draco had guessed that without being told. Draco and the traitor had just modified it a little. Harry took a deep breath, feeling the water gurgle harmlessly in his lungs. They'd fought in the forest, and he hadn't gotten a chance to say it. They'd fought in the corridors of Hogwarts, and he hadn't gotten a chance to say it. They'd fought in the air, broomsticks issued to every soldier, and it still hadn't made sense to say it. Harry had thought he wouldn't ever get to say those words, not while he was still young enough for them to be real. The Chaos Legionnaires were looking at Harry in puzzlement as their general swam with his feet pointing up toward the distant light of the surface, and his head pointed down toward the murky depths.
"Why are you upside down?"
The young commander shouted at his army, and began to explain how to fight, after you abandoned the privileged orientation of gravity. A hollow, booming bell echoed through the water, and on the instant, Zabini and Antony and five other soldiers struck out downward into the murky depths of the lake. Pavati Patil, the only Gryffindor in the group, turned her head back for a moment and gave them all a cheery wave as she dived. And after a moment, Scott and Matt did the same. The rest just sank and vanished. General Granger swallowed a lump in her throat as she watched them go. She was risking everything on this, dividing her army instead of just trying to take as many enemy soldiers with them as possible. The thing to realize, Zabini had told her, was that no army would move until they had a plan that let them expect victory. Sunshine couldn't just plan to win themselves, they had to make both other armies think they would win until it was too late. Ernie and Ron still looked like they were in shock. Susan was gazing after the disappearing soldiers with a calculating look. Her army, what was left of it, just looked bewildered, traceries of light dappling on their uniforms as they all drifted just below the sunlit surface of the lake.
"Now what?" said Ron.
"Now we wait,"
said Hermione, loudly enough for all her soldiers to hear. It felt odd to talk with her mouth full of water. She kept feeling like she was committing some sort of horrible impoliteness at the dinner table, and was about to drool all over herself.
"All of us left here are going to get zapped but that was going to happen anyway, with Dragon and Chaos ganging up on us. We've just got to take as many of them with us as we can. I've got a plan,
said one of her sunshine soldiers. Hannah, her voice had been a little hard to recognize at first.
It's like all complicated, but I know how we can get Dragon and Chaos to start fighting each other. Me too,
said Fay.
I've got a plan too. See, Neville Longbottom's secretly on our side.
You were talking to Neville, said Ernie. That's not right. I was the one who...
Daphne Greengrass and a couple of Slytherins who hadn't gone with Zabini were giggling helplessly as the cries of,
No, wait, I was the one who got Longbottom,
erupted from one soldier after another. Hermione just looked at them all wearily.
Okay,
said Hermione when it had all died down.
Does everyone get it? All your plots were faked by the Chaos Legion, or maybe some by Dragon. Anyone who really wanted to betray Harry or Malfoy went straight to me or Zabini, not you. Just go ahead and compare notes on all your secret plots, and you'll see it for yourselves.
She might not be as good at plotting as Zabini, but she could always understand what all her officers told her. That was why Professor Quirrell had made her the general.
So don't bother trying to do any plots when the other armies get here. Just fight, okay? Please?
But,
said Ernie, with shock on his face,
Neville's in awful puff. You're saying he lied to us?
Daphne was laughing so hard and so helplessly that the exhalations had turned her upside down in the water.
I'm not sure what Longbottom is,
said Ron darkly,
but I don't think he's a Hufflepuff any more, not now that Harry Potter's got to him.
Do you know?
Said Susan.
I asked him that, and Neville told me he'd become a Chaos Hufflepuff. Anyway,
said Hermione in a loud voice,
Zabini took everyone who we thought was a spy, so in our army we can stop watching each other quite so hard now, I hope.
Antony was a spy,
yelled Ron.
Parvati was a spy,
gasped Hannah.
Parvati was totally a spy,
said Daphne.
She shopped at the spy shoe store and wore spy lipstick, and someday she's going to marry a nice spy husband and have a lot of little spies.
And then a gong sound echoed through the water, indicating that Sunshine had just scored 2 points. This was shortly followed by the triple gong of Dragon losing a single point. Traitors weren't allowed to kill generals, not after the disaster of the first battle in December, when all 3 generals had been shot in the first minute. But with any luck...
Aww,
said Hermione.
It sounds like Mr. Krabs taking a little nap.
Like 2 shoals of fish, the armies swam along. Neville Longbottom kicked his feet in slow, measured motions. Diving. Always diving, in whatever direction you happened to be moving. You wanted to show the enemy the smallest profile. Present them with your head or your feet. So you were always diving. Downward and head first. And the enemy was always down. Like every Chaos Legionnaire in the army, Neville's head was constantly rotating as he swam, looking up, down, around, to every side. Not just watching for sunshine soldiers, but watching for any sign that a Chaos Legionnaire had drawn their wand and was about to betray them. Usually, traitors waited until the confusion of battle to make their move, but that early gong had put them all on guard. The truth was, Neville was feeling sad about that. In November, he had been a soldier in a united army, all of them pulling together and helping each other.
And now they were all watching each other constantly for the first signs of betrayal. It might have been more fun for General Chaos, but it wasn't nearly as much fun for Neville. The direction, formerly known as Up, was getting steadily brighter as they came closer to the surface and sunshine.
"One's out!" said General Chaos.
Neville's squad drew their wands, pointing them straight ahead toward the enemy as their heads scanned around more rapidly. If there were Sunny traitors, the time was approaching for them to strike. The other shoal of fish, Dragon Army, was doing the same.
"Now!"
shouted the distant voice of the Dragon General.
"Now!"
shouted General Chaos.
"For sunshine!"
shouted all the soldiers in both armies, and charged downward.
"What?"
said Minerva involuntarily as she watched the screens from next to the lake. A cry echoed in many other places. All of Hogwarts was watching this battle as they had watched the first. Professor Quirrell was laughing dryly.
"I warned you, Headmaster. It is impossible to have rules without Mr. Potter exploiting them."
For long, precious seconds, as the 47 soldiers charged her own 17, Hermione's mind went blank. Why? Then it all snapped into place. Every time a soldier originally from Sunshine got shot by someone crying the name of Sunshine, she would lose a Quirrell point. When two Sunshine soldiers were shot by either army, both enemy armies would be 2 points closer to overtaking her. It was the same gain, only shared. And if anyone shot another soldier not in the name of Sunshine, that gong wouldn't get lost in the confusion. Hermione was suddenly very glad that Sabini hadn't gone with the obvious plan of starting trouble between the other two armies while they attacked Sunshine. It was still disheartening, though, that sense of your own chances closing down, of hope being taken away. Most of Hermione's soldiers were still looking confused, but some had expressions of dawning horror as they got it.
"It's all right,"
Susan Bones said firmly. Heads turned to look at the Sunshine Captain.
"Our job is the same, to take as many of them with us as we can. And remember, Zabini took away all the spies. We don't have to stay on the lookout like they do."
The girl was smiling defiantly, provoking answering smiles from many of the other soldiers, even from Hermione herself.
"It can be like it was in November. We just have to keep our heads high, fight our best and trust each other."
Daphne shot her.
"Blood for the Blood God!"
shrieked Neville of Chaos, though, since he was underwater, it came out more like,
"Blubbed for the Blubbed Glub!"
Captain Weasley spun and raised his wand toward Neville and fired. But Neville was swimming downward, toward him, wand pointed straight ahead, and that meant the simple shield could shelter Neville's entire profile. If anyone shot him now, it wasn't going to be Sonny Ron. A grimly determined look came over Captain Weasley's face, and he arrowed straight up toward Neville, mouthing the word, "Contago!" though the shield wasn't visible in the water. The two enemy champions shot toward each other like arrows released from bows, each aimed to split the other down the middle. They had dueled many times before, but this time would pay for all. Far away, by the lakeside, 100 breaths were held.
"Rainbows and unicorns!"
roared the Sunshine Captain.
"The Black Goat with 1,000 young!"
"Do your homework!"
Closer and yet closer the two champions charged, neither willing to swerve. The first person to turn would present a vulnerable broadside and get shot, though if neither lost their nerve, they would crash right into each other. Falling straight down as the enemy rose straight up to meet him, hammer descending to meet anvil in a path neither was willing to leave.
Special attack! Chaotic twist!
Neville saw the look of horror on Captain Weasley's face as the hover charm caught him.
They'd tested it before the battle had started, and just as Harry had suspected, Wingardium Leviosa became a whole new sort of weapon once everyone was swimming underwater.
"Curse you, Longbottom!" shrieked Ron Weasley. "Can't you ever fight without your dumb special attacks?"
And by that time, the Sunshine Captain had been spun around sideways, and Neville shot him in the leg.
"I don't fight fair," said Neville to the sleeping form. "I fight like Harry Potter."
Granger, 237. Malfoy, 217. Potter, 220. It still hurt every time he had to shoot Hermione. Harry could hardly stand to look at the expression of peace that had come over her sleeping face, arms now drifting aimlessly as the curves of sunlight moved across her camouflaged uniform and the cloud of her chestnut hair. And if Harry had tried to duck out of being the one to shoot her, not only would Draco have known what it meant, Hermione would have been offended.
"She's not dead,"
Harry said to his brain as his kicking feet pushed him away.
"She's just resting, idiot!" "Are you sure?"
said his brain.
"What if she's an ex-Hermione? Could we go back and check?"
Harry glanced back briefly.
"See? She's fine. There are bubbles coming out of her mouth. Could have been her last breath escaping. Oh, be quiet. Why are you being so paranoid protective anyway? First real friend we've ever had in our whole life? Hey, remember what happened to your pet rock? Would you shut up about that worthless lump of rubble? It wasn't even alive, let alone sentient. That is like the most pathetic childhood trauma ever."
The two armies swiftly separated, becoming two shoals of fish once more. General Granger had gone down 17 points and taken 3 chaotics and 2 dragons with her. And 1 chaotic and 2 dragons had been shot as traitors, so she had lost net 7 points. Harry had lost 1, Draco had lost 2. That put Sunshine 20 points up on Dragon and 17 points up on Chaos. Chaos could still win easily if they exterminated all 20 remaining dragons. The wild card, of course, being those 7 remaining Sunshine soldiers. If you could call them that. The two shoals swam uneasily next to each other, the soldiers in each army awaiting the order to call out their true allegiances and attack.
"Everyone who got 'em!"
Harry said loudly.
"Remember Special Orders 1 through 3, and don't forget it's Merlin Says on 3, do not acknowledge."
The trustworthy 2/3 of the army did not nod, and the other 1/3 just looked puzzled. "Special Order 1. Don't bother trying to call out any code words in this battle. Don't expend effort on any plot not specifically approved by the commander. Just swim, shield, and fire." Hermione and Draco had both been fighting their soldiers, trying to get them to stop plotting on their own all through December. Harry had egged his soldiers on and supported their plotting through the last 2 battles, while also telling them that at some future point he might ask them to put a plot or two on hold, to which they'd all readily agreed. So now, in this critical battle, they were happy to obey.
Neither Hermione or Draco could have given that order successfully, Harry was certain. It was the difference between your soldiers seeing you as an ally in their plotting and seeing you as a spoilsport old fuddy-duddy who didn't want them to have any fun. Imposition of order equaled escalation of chaos, and it also worked in reverse.
"There they are!"
shouted someone and pointed. From the depths of the lake arose the Forgotten Ones, the ones who'd forsaken the last battle. The seven missing sunshine soldiers, glowing with the bright aura of cowards, now fading as they returned to battle. The two shoals of fish wavered, pointing wands uneasily.
"Hold your fire!"
shouted Harry, and a similar cry came from General Malfoy. There was a moment of held breath. Then the seven sunshine soldiers swam up to join Dragon Army. There was a triumphant cheer from Dragon Army. There were cries of dismay from a third of the Chaos Legion. Some of the other two-thirds smiled, though they shouldn't have. Harry wasn't smiling.
"Oh, this is so completely not going to work."
But Harry hadn't been able to think of anything better.
"Special orders 2 and 3 still apply,"
shouted Harry.
"Fight!
For the Chaos Legion!"
roared 20 chaotic legionnaires.
"For Dragon Army!"
roared 20 dragon warriors and 7 sunshine soldiers. And the chaotics dived straight downward as all the traitors got ready to strike. Granger, 237. Malfoy, 220. Potter, 226. Draco's head darted around frantically, trying to weigh up what was happening. Somehow, despite his greater forces, he had lost the initiative. 4 small chaotic forces were being pursued by 4 larger dragon forces, but because Draco's forces were the ones trying to force an engagement, it meant that they had to follow where chaos ran, and somehow that was producing concentrations of chaotic force that would fire into the exposed sides of dragon. It was happening again.
"Prismatis!"
shouted Draco, raising his wand and that shield you could see even through the water. A sparkling, multicoloured, flat wall wide enough to shield Draco and the 5 other dragons with him from their chaotic force that had just started firing on them as they swam past. And that let the other 5 dragons turn their attention back to the chaotic force they had been chasing. There was a tense moment as sleep spell after sleep spell crashed into Draco's prismatic wall, and Draco was hoping to Merlin that none of those 4 chaotics had learned the breaking drill hex. Then there was the bell of a dragon victory, and the chaotic force spun head for foot and began swimming away, and Draco, his hands now shaking slightly, dropped the prismatic wall and lowered his wand. Fighting in water was more exhausting, even, than fighting on broomsticks.
"Do not pursue!"
Draco cried to his soldiers as they started to follow, then,
"Sonorous! Reform on me!"
The dragon forces started converging on Draco, and the chaotic forces spun around and began pursuing the dragons on the instant. Draco swore out loud as he heard the bell of a chaotic victory. Someone had gotten their simple shield oriented right, and then the dragon forces were in supporting range of each other, and the chaotics were moving back into the murky distance. Somehow, despite their numerical superiority, the dragons had scored 3 times against the chaotics, and the chaotics had scored 4 times back. And he'd heard 1 dragon spy get executed. Either Harry Potter had thought a lot of very good ideas very fast, or, for some unimaginable reason, he'd already spent a lot of time working out how to fight underwater. This wasn't working, and Draco needed to rethink things. It looked like everyone was having trouble aiming while swimming too. The battle might last long enough that time would be called. The distant underwater moon was only half full now. That wasn't good.
He had to rethink things fast.
"What is it?"
said Padma Patel as she and her force swam over toward Draco. Padma was his second in command. She was clever and powerful, and, better yet, she hated Granger and saw Harry as a rival, which made her trustworthy. Working with Padma was making him realize the truth of the old adage that Ravenclaw was sister to Slytherin. Draco had been surprised when his father had told him it was an acceptable house for his future wife. But now he saw the sense of it.
"Wait until we're all here," Draco said.
The truth was, he needed to catch his breath. That was the trouble with being the general and the most powerful wizard. You had to keep using magic. Zabini came in next, commanding a force of 2 Sunnies and 4 dragons, one of whom was Gregory, keeping an eye on Zabini. Draco didn't trust Zabini, and neither Draco nor Zabini trusted the Sunnies enough to make them a majority of any unit. They were supposed to be loyal either to Draco directly or to Granger, who'd been fooled by the promise that the dragons would be betrayed in the end after both forces had been depleted, just as Harry's more trusted chaotics should have been fooled into not shooting at the Sunnies by the promise of their firing fake sleep hexes and switching to support chaos later. But it was possible some of the Sunnies were loyal to chaos and weren't firing real sleep hexes, and that was why Dragon wasn't winning the way their numerical advantage should have let them win. The next unit that approached was depleted. 3 soldiers holding wands on 2 other soldiers who were swimming with empty hands. Draco gritted his teeth. More traitor problems. He needed to talk to Professor Quirrell about having some way to punish traitors at least. Conditions like these were unrealistic. In real life, you tortured your traitors to death.
"General Malfoy," shouted the commander of the problem unit as it swam up, a Ravenclaw boy named Terry. "We don't know what to do. Cersei shot Bogdan, but Cersei says Kelhar told him that Bogdan shot Spectre."
"I didn't. General Malfoy, she's the spy. I should have..."
"Somnium," said Draco.
There was the triple bell of a 1-point loss from Dragon, and then Kelhar's limp body began to float away in the water. Draco had heard the word recursion by this point, and he knew a Harry Potter plot when he saw one. Unfortunately, Draco had not heard of autoimmune disorders, and the thought did not readily occur to him that a clever virus would begin its attack by creating symptoms of an autoimmune disorder so as to get the body to distrust its own immune system.
"General order," said Draco, raising his voice. "Nobody gets to shoot spies except myself, Gregory, Padma, and Terry. If anyone sees anything suspicious, they come to one of us."
And then there was the bell of sunshine scoring 2 points.
"What? What?"
said Draco and Zabini around the same time, their heads swiveled around. No one seemed to have gotten hit, and all the sunshine soldiers were present and accounted for. Except Parvati, who had been shot by some still unknown traitor in Padma's squad. And, of course, Padma had shot Parvati again in case she was faking, so it wasn't her.
"A sunny traitor in chaos?"
said Zabini, sounding puzzled.
"But all the ones I knew about were supposed to strike during Chaos's attack on Sunshine."
"No,"
said Padma in a tone of sudden realization.
"That was Chaos executing a spy."
"What?" said Sabini. "But why?"
And Draco got it.
Damn it.
"Because Potter thinks he's safe for how much he beats Sunshine, but not for how much he beats us. So, he doesn't want to lose a single point when he executes a traitor. General order! If you have to execute a traitor, call Sunshine first, and don't forget to switch back to Dragon afterward."
Granger, 253. Malfoy, 252. Potter,
252.
Longbottom's body drifted chaotically through the water, arms and legs disarrayed. After Draco had finally got a hit in, they'd all shot him again, just to be sure. Nearby was Harry Potter, now protected by a prismatic sphere, looking at them all grimly as the last sliver of crescent moon slowly diminished, somewhere far away. If Longbottom had managed to shoot one more soldier, Draco knew, Harry was thinking, if the two Chaotix had managed to hold out just a little longer, they might have won. After Draco had reformed his forces and struck out again, the ensuing battle and execution of spies in Sunshine's name had left Sunshine exactly 1 point ahead of Dragon and Chaos both. Once Harry had started doing it, Draco had been left with no choice but to follow suit. But now, they had General Chaos outnumbered 3-1, the survivors of Dragon Army and the last remaining Sunny traitor, Draco and Padma and Sabini. And Draco, he was no fool, had ordered Padma to take Sabini's wand after Longbottom had shot Gregory and fallen in turn to Draco. The boy had given him an insulted look, told Draco that he owed him for this, and handed it over. That left Draco and Padma to take down General Chaos.
"I don't suppose you'd like to surrender," said Draco, smiling as evilly as any smile he'd ever directed at Harry Potter.
"Sleep before surrender," shouted General Chaos.
"Just so you know," said Draco, "Zabini doesn't actually have an older sister for you to rescue from Gryffindor bullies. But Zabini does have a mother who doesn't approve of Muggleborns like Granger, and I wrote her a few notes and offered Zabini a few favours. Nothing involving my father, just things I can do in school. And by the way, Zabini's mother doesn't approve of the boy who lived either. Just in case you still thought Sabini was really on your side."
Harry's face grew even grimmer. Draco raised his wand and began breathing rhythmically, building up strength for a breaking drill hex. Granger's prismatic sphere was almost as strong as Draco's now, and Harry wasn't much weaker. Where did those two find the time?
"Lagan!"
spoke Draco, putting everything he had into it, and the green spiral blazed out and Harry's shield shattered, and at almost the same moment...
"Somnium!"
said Padma. Granger, 253. Malfoy, 252. Potter, 254. Harry let out a long breath of relief, and not just because he didn't have to hold the prismatic sphere anymore. His hand was shaking as he lowered his wand.
"You know," said Harry, "I was pretty worried there for a moment."
Special Order 2. If a Sunny traitor doesn't seem to be really shooting at you, fake being hit occasionally. Prefer targeting dragons to sunnies, but go ahead and shoot sunnies if you can't shoot dragons. Special Order 3. Merlin says, do not shoot at Blaze Zabini or either Patil twin. With a wide grin, Parvati Patil stripped the transfigured patch off her uniform's insignia and let it float away in the water.
"Gryffindors for chaos,"
she said, and handed Zabini his wand back.
"Thank you very much," Harry said, and bowed sweepingly to the Gryffindor girl. "And thank you as well,"
bowing to Zabini.
"You know, when you came to me with that plan, I wondered if you were brilliant or crazy, and I've decided that you're both. And by the way," Harry said, now turning as though to address Draco's body, "Zabini does have a cousin." "Somnium," said Zabini's voice.
Granger, 255. Malfoy, 252. Potter, 254. And Harry Potter's body floated away, his expression of shock and horror quickly relaxing into sleep.
"On second thought,"
Parvati said cheerfully,
"make that Gryffindors for sunshine."
She started to laugh, more exhilarated than she'd ever been in her life. She had finally gotten to assassinate and replace her twin sister, and she'd wanted to do that since forever. And this had been perfect. It had all been perfect. And then her wand spun around in a lightning motion just as Zabini's wand turned to point at her.
"Wait," said Zabini. "Do not shoot. Do not resist. That's an order."
"What?"
said Parvati.
Sorry,
said Zabini, looking not quite sincerely apologetic.
"But I can't be totally sure you're for sunshine. So I order you to let me shoot you."
"Hold on," said Parvati. "We're only ahead of chaos by 1 point. If you shoot me now..."
"I'll shoot you in the name of dragon, obviously,"
said Zabini, now sounding a little superior.
"Just because we tricked them into doing it doesn't mean it won't work for us."
Parvati stared at him, her eyes narrowing.
"General Malfoy said your mother doesn't like Hermione."
"I suppose," said Zabini, still with that superior smirk. "But some of us are more willing than Draco Malfoy to annoy a parent."
"And Harry Potter said you have a cousin."
"Nope," said Zabini.
Parvati stared at him, trying to think, but she wasn't really good at plotting. Zabini had said the plan was to secretly keep the scores of Chaos and Dragon as even as possible, so they'd use Sunshine's name to execute their traitors instead of losing even a single point, and that had worked. But she had the feeling she was missing something. She wasn't Slytherin.
"Why don't I shoot you in the name of Dragon?"
said Parvati.
"Because I outrank you," said Zabini.
Parvati had a bad feeling about this. She stared at him for a long moment. And then...
"Somni,"
she started to say, and then realized she hadn't said "for dragon," and frantically cut herself off. Granger, 255. Malfoy, 254. Potter, 254.
"Hey, everyone,"
said Blaise Zabini's face on the screens, looking quite amused.
"I guess it's all down to me."
All by the lakeside, people were holding their breath. Sunshine was ahead of Dragon and Chaos by exactly 1 point. Blaise Zabini could shoot himself in the name of either Dragon or Chaos, or just leave things the way they were. A series of chimes indicated that the last minute of time was running out, and the Slytherin was smiling a strange, twisted smile, and casually toying with his wand, the dark wood barely visible in the dark water.
"You know,"
said Blaise Zabini's voice, in the tones of someone who'd been rehearsing the words for a while.
"It's just a game, really. And games are supposed to be fun. So, how about if I just do whatever I feel like?"
Chapter 34. Coordination Problems, Part 2. Minerva and Dumbledore together had applied their combined talent to conjure the grand stage toward which Quirrell now slowly trudged. It was, at its core, sturdy wood, but the outer surfaces shone with the glitter of marble inlaid with platinum and studded with gems of every house colour. Neither she nor the headmaster was any founder of Hogwarts, but the conjuration only needed to last a few hours. Minerva ordinarily enjoyed the few occasions when she had the occasion to tire herself out on large transfigurations. She should have enjoyed the many small chances for artistry, and the illusion of opulence, but this time she had done the work with the dreadful feeling of digging her own grave. But Minerva was feeling a little better now. There'd been one brief moment when the explosion might have come, but Dumbledore had already been standing up and applauding warmly, and no one had proven foolish enough to riot in front of the headmaster. And the explosive mood had rapidly faded into a collective statement which might perhaps have been described by the phrase, "Give us a break!" Blaise Zabini had shot himself in the name of sunshine, and the final score had been 254 to 254 to 254. Behind the stage, waiting to ascend, three children were glaring at each other in mingled fury and frustration. It didn't help that they were still damp from being fished out of the lake, and that the warming charms didn't seem quite enough to make up for the crisp December air. Or maybe it was just their mood.
"That's it," said Granger. "I've had it. No more traitors!"
"I completely agree with you, Miss Granger," Draco said icily. "Enough is enough."
"And what do you two intend to do about it?"
snapped Harry Potter.
"Professor Quirrell already said he wouldn't ban spies."
"We'll ban them for him," said Draco grimly.
He hadn't even understood what he meant by the words as he said them, but the very act of speaking seemed to crystallize a plan. The stage really was well done, at least for a temporary structure. The makers hadn't fallen into the usual pitfall of being impressed by their own illusion of wealth, and knew something about architecture and visual style. From where Draco stood, in the obvious place for him to stand, the watching students would see him haloed in the faint glitter of emeralds, and Granger, standing where Draco had subtly motioned her, would be haloed in Ravenclaw's sapphire. As for Harry Potter, Draco wasn't looking at him right now. Professor Quirrell had awakened, or whatever it was he did, and was leaning upon a platinum podium, bare of all gems. With evident showmanship, the defense professor was carefully stacking and squaring those three envelopes containing the three parchments upon which the three generals had written their wishes, as all the students of Hogwarts watched and waited. Finally, Professor Quirrell looked up from the envelopes.
"Well," said the defense professor, "this is inconvenient."
A slight titter of laughter ran through the crowd with a sharp undertone.
I suppose you are all wondering what I will do, said Professor Quirrell. There is nothing for it. I shall have to do what is fair. Although, first, there was a little speech I wanted to make, and before even that, it appears to me that Mr. Malfoy and Miss Granger have something they wish to share.
Draco blinked, and then he and Granger traded rapid glances. May I? Yes, go ahead. And Draco raised his voice.
General Granger and I would both like to say...
Draco said in his most formal voice, knowing it was being amplified and heard,
that we will no longer accept the help of any traitors, and if, in any battle, we find that Potter has accepted traitors from either of our armies, we will join forces to crush him.
And Draco shot a glance filled with malice at the boy who lived. Take that, General Chaos.
I agree completely with General Malfoy,
said Granger, standing beside him, a high voice clear and strong.
Neither of us will use traitors, and if General Potter does, we will wipe him off the battlefield.
There was a susurration of surprise from the watching students.
Very good, said their defense professor, smiling. It took the two of you long enough, but you are still to be congratulated on having thought of it before any other generals.
It took a moment for this to soak in.
In the future, Mr. Malfoy... Miss Granger, before you come to my office with any request, consider whether there is a way for you to accomplish it without my help. I will not deduct Quirrell points on this occasion, but next time you may expect to lose the full 50.
Professor Quirrell wore an amused grin.
And what do you have to say about that, Mr. Potter?
Harry Potter's gaze went to Granger, then to Draco. His face appeared calm, though Draco was sure controlled would have been the better term. Finally, Harry Potter spoke, his voice level.
The Chaos Legion... is still happy to accept traitors. See you on the battlefield.
Draco knew the shock was showing on his face. There were astonished murmurs from the watching students, and when Draco glanced at the front row, he saw that even Harry's chaotics looked taken aback. Granger's face was angry and getting angrier.
Mr. Potter!
She said in a sharp tone, like she thought she was a teacher.
Are you trying to be obnoxious?
Most certainly not, Harry Potter said calmly. I won't make you do it every time. Beat me once, and I'll stay beaten. But threats aren't always enough, General of Sunshine. You didn't ask me to join with you, but tried simply to impose your will. And sometimes you must actually defeat the enemy to impose your will on him. You see, I am skeptical that Hermione Granger, the brightest academic star of Hogwarts, and Draco, son of Lucius, scion of the noble and most ancient house of Malfoy, can work together to beat their common foe, Harry Potter.
An amused smile crossed Harry Potter's face.
Maybe I'll just do what Draco tried with Sabini, and write a letter to Lucius Malfoy and see what he thinks about that.
Harry!
Gasped Granger, looking absolutely aghast, and there were gasps from the audience as well.
Draco controlled the anger flushing through him. That had been a stupid move on Harry's part, saying that in public. If Harry had simply done it, it might have worked. Draco hadn't even thought about that. But now, if Father did that, it would look like he was playing into Harry's hands.
If you think my father, Lord Malfoy, can be manipulated by you that easily, Draco said coldly, you have a surprise coming, Harry Potter.
And Draco realized, as the words finished leaving his mouth, that he'd just backed his own father squarely into a corner, more or less without even meaning to. Father probably wasn't going to like this. Not in the tiniest bit, but now it would be impossible for him to say so. Draco would have to apologize for that. It had been an honest accident, but it was strange to think that he'd done it at all.
Then go ahead and defeat the evil General Chaos,
Harry said, still looking amused.
I can't win against both your armies, not if you really work together. But I wonder if perhaps I could break you up before then.
You won't, and we'll crush you, said Draco.
And beside him, Hermione Granger firmly nodded.
Well, said Professor Quirrell after the astounded silence had stretched for a while. That was not how I expected that particular conversation to go.
The defense professor had a rather intrigued expression on his face.
Truthfully, Mr. Potter, I expected you to concede immediately and with a smile, then announce that you had long since worked out my intended lesson, but had decided not to spoil it for others. Indeed, I planned my speech accordingly, Mr. Potter.
Harry Potter just shrugged.
Sorry about that,
he said, and said nothing more.
Oh, don't worry, said Professor Quirrell. This too will serve.
And Professor Quirrell turned from the three children and straightened at the podium to address the whole watching crowd. His customary air of detached amusement dropped away like a falling mask, and when he spoke again, his voice was amplified louder than it had been.
If not for Harry Potter, said Professor Quirrell, his voice as crisp and cold as December, you know who would have won.
The silence was instant and total.
Make no mistake, said Professor Quirrell. The Dark Lord was winning. There were fewer and fewer Aurors who dared face him. The vigilantes who opposed him were being hunted down. One Dark Lord and perhaps 50 Death Eaters were winning against a country of thousands. That is beyond ridiculous. There are no grades low enough for me to mark that incompetence.
There was a frown on the face of Headmaster Dumbledore, and on the faces of the audience, puzzlement, and the utter silence went on.
Do you understand now how it happened? You saw it today. I allowed traitors and gave the generals no means to restrain them. You saw the result. Clever plots and clever betrayals, until the last soldier left on the battlefield shot himself. You cannot possibly doubt that all three of those armies could have been defeated by any outside foe that was unified within itself."
Professor Quirrell leaned forward at the podium, his voice now filled with a grim intensity. His right hand stretched out, fingers open and spread.
"Division is weakness," said the defense professor. His hand closed into a tight fist. "Unity is strength. The Dark Lord understood that well, whatever his other follies, and he used that understanding to create the one simple invention that made him the most terrible Dark Lord in history. Your parents faced one Dark Lord and 50 Death Eaters who were perfectly unified, knowing that any breach of their loyalty would be punished by death, that any slack or incompetence would be punished by pain. None could escape the Dark Lord's grasp once they took his mark, and the Death Eaters agreed to take that terrible mark because they knew that once they took it, they would be united, facing a divided land. One Dark Lord and 50 Death Eaters would have defeated an entire country by the power of the Dark Mark."
Professor Quirrell's voice was bleak and hard.
"Your parents could have fought back in kind. They did not. There was a man named Yermy Wibble who called upon the nation to institute a draft, though he did not quite have vision enough to propose a mark of Britain. Yermy Wibble knew what would happen to him. He hoped his death would inspire others. So, the Dark Lord took his family for good measure. Their empty skins inspired nothing but fear, and no one dared to speak again. And your parents would have faced the consequences of their despicable cowardice if not for being saved by a one-year-old boy."
Professor Quirrell's face showed full contempt.
"A dramatist would have called that a deus ex machina, for they did nothing to earn their salvation. He who must not be named may not have deserved to win, but make no doubt of it, your parents deserved to lose."
The voice of the defense professor rang forth like iron.
"And know this, your parents have learned nothing. The nation is still fragmented and weak. How few decades passed between Grindelwald and you-know-who. Do you think you will not see the next threat in your own lifetimes? Will you repeat, then, the follies of your parents when you have seen the results so clearly laid out before you this day? For I can tell you what your parents will do when the day of darkness comes. I can tell you what lesson they have learned. They have learned to hide like cowards and do nothing while they wait for Harry Potter to save them."
There was a wondering look in the eyes of Headmaster Dumbledore, and other students gazed up at their defense professor with bewilderment and anger and awe. Professor Quirrell's eyes were as cold now as his voice.
"Mark this, and mark it well. He who must not be named wished to rule over this country, to hold it in his cruel grasp forever. But at least he wished to rule over a living country, and not a heap of ash. There have been dark lords who were mad, who wished only to make the world a vast funeral pyre. There have been wars in which one whole country marched against another. Your parents nearly lost against half a hundred who thought to take this country alive. How quickly would they have been crushed by a foe more numerous than they? A foe that cared for nothing but their destruction. This I foretell. When the next threat rises, Lucius Malfoy will claim that you must follow him or perish, that your only hope is to trust in his cruelty and strength. And though Lucius Malfoy himself will believe it, this will be a lie. For when the Dark Lord perished, Lucius Malfoy did not unite the Death Eaters. They were shattered in an instant. They fled like whipped dogs and betrayed each other. Lucius Malfoy is not strong enough to be a true lord, dark or otherwise.
Draco Malfoy's fists were clenched white. There were tears in his eyes, and fury, and unbearable shame.
"No," said Professor Quirrell. "I do not think it will be Lucius Malfoy who saves you. And, lest you think that I speak on my own behalf, time will make clear soon enough that this is not so. I make no recommendation, my students, but I say that if a whole country were to find a leader as strong as the Dark Lord, but honorable and pure, and take his mark, then they could crush any Dark Lord like an insect, and all the rest of our divided magical world could not threaten them. And if some still greater enemy rose against us in a war of extermination, then only a united magical world could survive."
There were gasps, mostly from Muggleborns. The students in green-trimmed robes looked merely puzzled. Now it was Harry Potter whose fists were clenched tight and trembling, and Hermione Granger beside him was angry and dismayed. The headmaster rose from his seat, his face now stern, saying no word as yet, but the command was clear.
"I do not say what threats will come," said Professor Quirrell. "But you will not live all your lives in peace, not if the past history of the world is any guide at all to its future. And if you do in the future, as you have seen three armies do this day, if you cannot throw aside your petty bickering and take the mark of a single leader, then indeed you might wish that the Dark Lord had lived to rule over you, and regret the day that ever Harry Potter was born."
"Enough!"
bellowed Albus Dumbledore. There was silence. Professor Quirrell slowly turned his head to gaze at where Albus Dumbledore stood in the fury of his wizardry. Their eyes met, and a soundless stress pressed down like a weight upon all the students as they listened, not daring to move.
"You, too, failed this country," said Professor Quirrell. "And you know the peril as well as I. Such speeches are not for the ears of students," said Albus Dumbledore in a dangerously rising voice, "nor for the mouths of professors."
Dryly, then, Professor Quirrell spoke.
"There were many speeches made for the ears of adults as the Dark Lord rose, and the adults clapped and cheered, and went home having enjoyed their day's entertainment. But I will obey you, Headmaster, and make no further speeches if you do not like them. My lesson is simple. I will go on doing nothing about traitors, and we will see what students can do for themselves about that. When they do not wait for professors to save them."
And then Professor Quirrell turned back to his students, and his mouth quirked up in a wry grin that seemed to dissipate the dreadful pressure, like a god blowing to scatter the clouds.
"But do please be kind to the traitors up until now," said Professor Quirrell. "They were just having fun."
There was laughter, though it was nervous at first. And then it seemed to build as Professor Quirrell stood there smiling wryly, and some of the tension released itself. Draco's mind was still whirling through a thousand questions and a daze of horror as Professor Quirrell prepared to open the envelopes in which the three had inscribed their wishes. It had never before occurred to Draco that moon-travelling muggles were a greater threat than the slow decline of wizardry, or that father had proven himself too weak to stop them. And, even stranger, the obvious implication. Professor Quirrell believed that Harry could. The defense professor claimed to have made no recommendation, but he'd mentioned Harry Potter over and over in his speech. Others would already be thinking the same thing as Draco.
It was ridiculous.
The boy who had covered a stuffed chair in glitter and called it a throne.
The boy who faced down Snape and won,
whispered a traitorous voice.
That boy could grow into a lord strong enough to rule, strong enough to save us all.
Harry had been raised by muggles. He was practically a mudblood himself. He wouldn't fight against his adopted family.
He knows their arts, their secrets, and their methods. He can take all of the muggle science and use it against them, alongside our own power as wizards.
But what if he refuses? What if he's too weak?
Then,
said that inner voice,
it will have to be you, won't it, Draco Malfoy?
And then there was a renewed hush from the crowd as Professor Quirrell opened the first envelope.
"Mr. Malfoy," said Professor Quirrell, "your wish is for Slytherin to win the House Cup.
There was a puzzled pause from the watching audience.
Yes, Professor, said Draco in a clear voice, knowing that it was once again being amplified. If you can't do that, then something else for Slytherin.
I will not award house points unfairly, said Professor Quirrell.
He tapped a cheek, looking thoughtful.
Which makes your wish difficult enough to be interesting. Would you like to say anything about why, Mr. Malfoy?
Draco turned from the defense professor, gazed out at the crowd from against that backdrop of platinum and emeralds. Not all of Slytherin had cheered for Dragon Army. There were anti-Malfoy factions who had expressed that dissatisfaction by supporting the boy who lived, or even Granger. And those factions would be encouraged greatly by what Zabini had done. He needed to remind them that Slytherin meant Malfoy, and Malfoy meant Slytherin.
No, said Draco. They're Slytherins. They'll understand.
There was some laughter from the audience, especially in Slytherin, even from some students who would have called themselves anti-Malfoy a moment earlier. Flattery was a lovely thing. Draco turned back to look at Professor Quirrell again, and was surprised to see an embarrassed look on Granger's face.
"And for Miss Granger," said Professor Quirrell. There was the sound of a tearing envelope. "Your wish is for Ravenclaw to win the House Cup."
There was considerable laughter from the audience, including a chuckle from Draco. He hadn't thought Granger played that game.
Well,
said Granger, sounding like she was suddenly stumbling over a memorized speech.
I meant to say that...
She took a deep breath.
There were soldiers from every house in my army... And I don't mean to slight any of them, but houses should still count for something, too. It was sad when students in the same house were hexing each other just because they were in different armies. People should be able to rely on whoever's in their house. That's why Godric Gryffindor and Salazar Slytherin and Rowena Ravenclaw and Helga Hufflepuff created the four houses of Hogwarts in the first place. I am the General of Sunshine, but even before that I am Hermione Granger of Ravenclaw, and I'm proud to be part of a house that's 800 years old.
Well said, Miss Granger,
said Dumbledore's booming voice. Harry Potter was frowning, and something tickled at the edge of Draco's recognition.
"An interesting sentiment, Miss Granger," said Professor Quirrell. "But there are times when it is good for a Slytherin to have friends in Ravenclaw, or for a Gryffindor to have friends in Hufflepuff. Surely it would be best if you could rely both on your friends in your house and also your friends in your army."
Granger's eyes flicked briefly towards the watching students and teachers, and she said nothing. Professor Quirrell nodded as though to himself, and then turned back to the podium, and took up and tore open the last envelope. Beside Draco, Harry Potter visibly tensed up as the defense professor drew forth the parchment.
"And Mr. Potter wishes for..."
There was a pause as Professor Quirrell looked at the parchment. Then, without any change of expression on Professor Quirrell's face, the sheet of parchment burst into flames and burned with a brief, intense fire that left only drifting black dust sprinkling down from his hand.
"Please confine yourself to the possible, Mr. Potter," said Professor Quirrell, sounding very dry indeed.
There was a long pause. Harry, standing beside Draco, looked rather shaken.
"What in Merlin's name did he ask for?"
"I do hope," said Professor Quirrell, "that you prepared another wish, if I could not grant that one."
Harry drew a deep breath.
"I didn't," he said, "but I already thought of another one."
Harry Potter turned to look out at the audience, and his voice firmed as he spoke.
"People fear traitors because of the damage the traitor does directly. The soldiers they shoot, or the secrets they tell. But that's only part of the danger. What people do because they're afraid of traitors also costs them. I used that strategy today against Sunshine and Dragon. I didn't tell my traitors to cause as much direct damage as possible. I told them to act in the way that would create the most distrust and confusion, and make the generals do the most costly things to try and stop them from doing it again. When there are just a few traitors, and a whole country opposing them, it stands to reason that what a few traitors do might